Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It is April 22nd, and the track and field season feels like it's in full swing. I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Anderson Emerald.
And this week in track and field, we are talking the Xiamen Diamond League, the Kipkano Classic in Nairobi. Crazy sprint performances that happened all across the country. We had London Marathon, so much to unpack. Anderson, was it tough for you to kind of keep up with everything that was happening?
Dude, there was like world record after U.S. junior record. Like every day was just something different. And yeah, I mean, the Diamond League set off the year, so this is like we're in full swing with the season. We are in full swing.
Saturday in particular, you know, everyone brags about, you know, the NFL and like the red zone that they have. When you on Sunday, you can just tune into one channel and they'll bop around from game to game when something important is about to happen. Track and field needs something like that. But of course, like with all the various different rights holders and different parties, it's never going to happen. But it was one of those days where I felt like I kept refreshing. Oh, all right, I got to open up the Xiamen Diamond League results page. And then after that, the LSU home meet that was happening. And right. Oh, there's also this thing happening in South Carolina. And I was just like, across all the different time zones, it wasn't just, oh, the Diamond League is happening from 7 to 9. It was like, you know, Saturday became a full work day.
A full day. Yes. If you were a track fan, this was your weekend.
So let's start with the Diamond League, which we both woke up early to catch. The biggest headline of the whole entire thing is Mondo Duplantis breaking his own world record to open up his outdoor season, clears 6.24 meters. That's the eighth time that he's broken the pole vault world record. This time, once again, getting it by 1 centimeter. You know, if we knew how much Puma was paying him for every single time that he broke the world record, you know, he's purposely doing it by 1 centimeter every single year. So that bonus kicks in. This is how Puma goes broke. But Anderson, what did you make of Mondo Duplantis starting the year off like this?
I mean, it's kind of unfair. The fact this is his season's opener and he's breaking the world record. And I think his last competition of 2023, he also broke the world record at the Prefontaine Classic, the Diamond League final. And so, I mean, it's monumental. He's just like furthering his status as the GOAT of the pole vault. But what I actually really loved was they showed, I don't know if this was the first time, but they showed like the actual height. So as if, you know, he had that extra height, and they actually showed on TV and it was like 6.29 meters. So he had 5 extra centimeters to spare. And it's like, this guy is insane. Like it's easy to say we're witnessing greatness, but I mean, Mondo is really breaking barriers that, you know, no one has ever seen before. It's crazy.
Yeah. See, I think that was the interesting part is I took a screenshot. I tweeted it out of just sort of like the amount of room that Mondo has when he goes over the bar. We just posted a whole interview with him that Xavier Gallo got while he was in Paris for Puma's unveiling of the Olympic team kits. And so he got some time with Mondo and he asked him kind of about the intricacies of the pole vault. Like, what are the tiny little changes that we don't see? And there's a variety of different factors that have to line up. You know, it's the speed that and the point from where you're taking off. It's the grip, it's the pole. So many different things have to go right. And I feel like most people, when they watch a pole vault, just think, oh, you got over it or you didn't. And they're doing the same thing over and over again. But you have to make all of these tiny different changes. And so I'd be so curious now after watching that interview, I've got so many different follow-up questions besides just like, oh, how did that feel? Right. Like I like it when the best in the world get nerdy and break things down in particular. But, you know, I think one thing I caught that you said, and I was quick to also pull the trigger on Twitter and say like Mondo Duplantis is the GOAT. the Backstreet Boys, you know, the guys who have the podcast out in the UK, they were on our show last year during the World Championships. They're not as quick to call Mondo the GOAT. And obviously they think Sergei Bubka has that honor. Here's the response I got on Threads. It was Mondo, the actual GOAT, Sergei Bubka. Mondo might get there, but he'll need to win 6 World Championships in a row. Actually 8, as Sergei didn't have them in 85 or 89, be ranked number 1 13 times, set 35 world records, and hold the world record for 30 years first. So at a minimum, they're not ready to call Mondo Duplantis the GOAT until it's like 2050 something. And who knows what the state of the world is by then. But I will say, like, for this generation in this era, he's in that conversation. And honestly, I wonder if you put it to his contemporaries, Sam Kendricks, Ronaldo Villani, they might be quick to say, yeah, he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
I'm curious if Mondo thinks of himself in that way.
I feel like Mondo is pretty humble, where he might be like, you know, Bubka probably got it. Obviously, we're going to have some recency bias. We're like living through it, right? All these guys who are competing against him are kind of living through it. But yeah, Mondo would probably be like super, super humble. He's like, listen, I have a lot more to do. I have a lot more to go. But I mean, again, just the heights that he's clearing. And we clearly see that he's able to go significantly higher. He's just going centimeter by centimeter. So I understand that. I understand, like, there's that argument for Bubka. And it's probably accurate technically. But it's like tough to see these insane heights and seeing how much there is to not kind of almost project Mondo as the GOAT, right? At least in the next coming years.
I wonder how many more times this season we're going to have a segment where we talk about Mondo breaking the world record again. I mean, do you think he'll do it again this year? It's sort of like he checks the box once, that he's like, I'm going to break the world record, cash out, and then just save it for next year. Because it doesn't matter, like, right? If he most times clears these things and wins these competitions on his first or second jump, that, like, he doesn't need to go that high to potentially win the Olympic gold medal.
Yeah, well, I mean, at this competition, this was his first attempt. So I'm not even sure if he expected to break the world record so easily, which leads me to think that he's going to be able to do it. I mean, he's going to compete this weekend at the next Diamond League again. And if we're talking about incentives, I mean, there's a reason he's going up by 1 centimeter. You might as well consistently go up by that. He could break it maybe once or twice again this year. So, yeah. And I think he did break it at Tokyo at the Olympics. Paris could be another opportunity. So
I really wish we knew the details of the Puma contract, because it could just be like, if you break it once in a season, that's the only time you only get paid out one time per season. And so then what's the point of raising the bar again and clearing it if your, you know, $150,000, whatever it might be, bonus doesn't kick in until next year? So he's already checked that box. I think that was the last we'll see of the world record, but I'd love to be proven wrong there.
I mean, if I was Mondo, I would have renegotiated like 2 years ago, like every time I break the world record. Because I'm, again, going up by 1 centimeter, I need that.
Yeah, he signed with Puma in 2019 coming out of college. And I just wonder if, like, how long they signed that contract for, when he re's up. I just know that the people in the sports marketing department who negotiated that might have a thing or two to say about the world record clause. But
yeah,
we almost saw another world record, this time in the women's 1500. Gudaf Sagai of Ethiopia gives it a scare, ended up running 3:50.30, moves to number 3 on the all-time list. Before this race, the season opener in China was supposed to be Faith Kipyegon versus Gudaf Sagai. Mm-hmm. Faith pulled out due to like some muscle irritation that she had. I don't think it's an injury that is a huge major cause for concern. But seeing this time this early from Gudaf Sagai kind of, you know, it's good for your prediction that Faith Kipyegon is not going to win the gold medal, because it looks like we have a battle on our hands.
Yeah. This was huge. And I was shocked. Obviously, Gudaf has that ability. She has that talent. But I was a little shocked to see her get that close. And there was almost a point, I think, either 2 or 3 laps in the race where I wasn't sure if she was aware of how fast she was going, right? And for her to run so close to the world record, number three all time, I mean, this, she A, has to run the 1500. I don't know what Ethiopia is going to do in terms of their selection, but she has to run the 1500. We have to see Faith and Gudov and Sifan. I really want to see them in a Diamond League race before the Olympic Games. That's going to be firework.
It was an interesting text I got from you on, you know, Saturday afternoon, where you were wondering, it's like, wait, so how does Ethiopia select their team for the track? Because to your point, like now, you know, in the past, we've seen some athletes only being put in one event. Gudov's a guy has some pretty good versatility where she could go 1500, 5K, 10K, like attempt the Sifan Hassan, Emil Zatopek triple that we saw from the last Olympics. The schedule is tough, of course, anytime you're doing three events at one meet. But if I look at it, like her gold medal chances are looking really good in the 5K, holding the world record. And now I think you have to not say Faith Kipyegon's a lock. If you're an odds maker, this past weekend, I think totally changes just, you know, how much of a favorite Faith is. Now we could be proven wrong. Faith could come back and just hit, you know, run 3:48 in her first race back. But suddenly I think the women's 1500 got really interesting.
Yeah. And it will really be interesting to see what the decision is, because Gudov has the 10K gold medal, she has a 5K gold medal, and the 15 is the only gold medal that she's missing. So there could be a world where she goes all in on the 15. And let's not forget that Faith also in the 5K, like Faith is probably going to double again, and it's not going to be a walk in the park, even though Gudov has the world record in the 5K. So I don't know. This just makes it overall extremely interesting. And again, I really want to see them in a Diamond League race before the Olympic Games. Get some pacers in there. Let's see something really, really fast.
I wonder if this changed things, though, to the point where it's like they're not going to want to race head to head. And that sucks. But that's, you know, just kind of like the way the sport. I'm playing devil's advocate here, where we have seen them go head to head so many times at the Prefontaine Classic, at some meets out in Europe. And now it's just sort of like, does Faith have a say sometimes when it comes to the way races are organized? They're both Nike athletes, and so I could see both of them being contractually obligated to compete at the Prefontaine Classic. So maybe that's our first opportunity at a rematch. Mm-hmm. I believe there's going to be a women's 1500 there. And so, yeah, for as much as people have been hyping Josh Kerr versus Jakob Ingebrigtsen, the women's side, just as exciting, just there's much less trash talk, and they're just super respectful of each other.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, we were surprised in the women's 200 meters.
Yes.
Because this one, all eyes were on Sha'Carri Richardson, the 100 meter world champion, opening up her season. Was supposed to run at the Miramar Invitational, which we talked about last week, but then, or 2 weeks ago, and that didn't happen. And so this was her first go around in the 200 meters, which is an event that she also focused her efforts on in the early part of 2023. It paid off. She came away with medals in the 100, the 200, and the 4x1. And so we're seeing a similar scheduling pattern for Sha'Carri Richardson here.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing is, this time around, Sha'Carri Richardson gets upset by 19-year-old Australian Tori Lewis, which came as a surprise to many people. The video interview that we put up from the virtual mix zone, courtesy of the Diamond League, with Tori Lewis has like over 100,000 views. I was familiar with her name just because, you know, she just competed at the Australian Nationals, and our Australian correspondent, Mitch Dyer, has been covering her career over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so she's a really good talent. I felt like she was the only one who ran through the line, and that's kind of how she came away with the win. Sha'Carri eased up and maybe even like leaned a little bit too early. What did you make of that race?
Yeah, I didn't even see her like when we're 110 meters into the race, and
she was in lane nine.
She was in lane nine, and you don't get lane nines very frequently on tracks, but yeah, I mean, I think again, she was probably she's coming off of the Australian National Championships, I think a week or two prior. They just had their summer season. So of course they're in different, you know, she's in a significantly different form than not only Sha'Carri, but then all the other Americans as well. And also even just on a basic level, travel, where coming from Australia, going to China is much easier than coming from the United States. So all those things are, of course, going to factor in. But I think this does at least, A, give her some motivation, and then B, give someone like Sha'Carri just the idea that, okay, no matter what, I have to make sure I'm on my A game. Yes, I don't think Tori Lewis is going to be like a medal threat, at least like this year, relative to Sha'Carri, to Sharika. But I think Sha'Carri is like, okay, I'm coming off of a very successful 2023 season. I need to make sure I'm on my A game throughout the rest of the year, to make sure that, you know, whatever it is, I maintain my 100 meter gold. I get potentially ahead a little bit in the 200 on the podium. So I'm not worried, not concerned. But I think this is a really, really, at least exciting race. We got some good headlines out of this, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm not ready to hit the panic button whatsoever on Sha'Carri Richardson. In fact, like it, like you said, lights a fire under her to, all right, you can't slow up before the finish line in the next one. And the next one is going to come in just a couple of days because she's scheduled to race at the Shanghai Diamond League. And right now, that world leading time, 22:08 by Gabby Thomas, I just feel like there's going to be so many women who are going to be, you know, one, I think Sharika Jackson and Gabby will probably run faster. Yep. Still haven't seen what Julia and Alfred, I guess this past weekend, she ran 22:58 at Mount SAC. Like no one is going full force in April.
Yeah. It's the end of April, nothing to be worried about, nothing to be concerned about. And I think, and this was the first race of Sha'Carri's season. So, I mean, getting the rust off and everything, I think she's, I actually am very, very confident that Sha'Carri is going to be able to get things going. So, and notice that I think Sharika was supposed to run in this race and she might've pulled out, right? So there's that factor of just like, okay, where does what is Sharika up to? But yeah, I think this lights a fire under Sha'Carri. She's going to start turn up.
I'm scratching my head on Sharika Jackson right now, because even though like when you were in Jamaica, you know, she was talking about how she was writing out her goals for the season. Yeah. I think you'd even asked like if she's healthy and training's been going well. And she said, yes, but you know, of course, like pro athletes are always going to bluff when they're injured. If there's any, like, I don't know how much the margin of error can be for Sharika Jackson, right? Like, do you have an estimate on like, all right, like if Sharika Jackson is at 90%, can she still beat 100% healthy Gabby Thomas?
That is, it's hard to say. I mean, 21.4 to Gabby's right now at 21.6. That is a little bit of a buffer when we're talking about a 200, but Gabby's not going to be at 21.6 in my opinion. I think she's going to get to at least 21.5. She knows that she needs to step things up to get to where Sharika's at. So I think, I don't know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I think Sharika, whatever is going on, I know she's going to be prepared. I know she wants to be prepared and is likely going to be prepared, but she has to be on her A game. And let's not even forget that Sha'Carri ran a windy 21.6 at USA's last year. So it's not like, of course, she's not as fast yet, but who knows? There's a lot that's going to be coming up in the 200. So I don't know, but I think I'm going to stick with you. Like, Sharika, Gabby are the top two, but we'll see how Sharika kind of pans out.
To kind of take a little side tangent here and pull another result from this past weekend, Gabby Thomas, 50.37 for the 400 at LSU. Very impressive. Last year, obviously ran 49.68 in Austin, Texas at the Texas Relays. But yeah, one, you could say that she's strong and that's going to benefit her in the 200, but two, strong case for the Team USA 4x4 come the Olympics. And she's on the roster for the World Relays.
World Relays.
4x1 or 4x4?
4x1. She's in the 4x1 at World Relays, yeah. So, I mean, yes. And I don't know. Well, obviously, the USA, they messed up in the heats in Budapest. So we don't know if Gabby would have actually run. Maybe she would have run the 4x4 in Budapest. But yeah, I think she's making a strong case across the board as like the overall. She's essentially becoming the next Allyson Felix in a sense. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know. This is going to be hard to kind of map out and play out as the season progresses. But
do you have any strong feelings about the 4x4 selection process when it comes to the United States? Because let's look at what the Olympic roster was like in 2021.
Tokyo. Yeah.
The final was run by, who was it? Was it Allyson Felix, Thing Mo, Dalila Muhammad,
and Sydney.
And Sydney McLaughlin.
Yeah.
And three of those did not contest the 400 at the Olympics. Do you feel for the 400 specialists who go on to make the team, even the people who make the U.S. final and you're put in this pool, then all of a sudden you get to the actual games, maybe you run one round and that's it. Your Olympics is done because come the final, they're going to pull from other events. I just find it like it's kind of soul crushing for some of these athletes.
Like, it's, yes, it's true.
We have an abundance of talent come in the 400. But I feel for the people, it's like, oh, like you got replaced by someone who doesn't even contest the event. Granted, they are very talented.
I mean, yes, everyone is like super talented. But I mean, actually, at the last Olympics, you had Quinera Hayes. She actually made the 400 final and she didn't run on the 4x4 final, which is crazy. I mean, I don't know. I mean, can you make a case against Sydney McLaughlin, a Thing Mo, like, you know, if Gabby Thomas, even like Shamir Little, you know, I think last year she ran 49 seconds. So, I mean, if they're the top quote unquote 400 meter runners, it's hard to bet against them. But I don't know.
It all comes down to just like the selection criteria and the whole process being just kind of very vague. When the World Relays rosters came out and we posted it up on Instagram, like the whole comment section was just like, where's Fred Curley? Where's Christian Coleman? And I think like if you're Team USA and you want these stars to represent you at more of these stages, I think you need to put your foot down and be like, no, you're not going to run the Olympic relays unless you represent us at the World Relays. And then that's how you get those stars to show up to that meet. So in a way, like, I give props to Noah Lyles and Gabby Thomas and the rest of, you know, Tanja Buford Bailey's, you know, squad that's going out to Nassau in the Bahamas, because it's like, oh no, you're actually getting practice on, you know, how relays work. You're representing your country. You're not just, you know, blowing off the World Relays as just another meet. So if it was up to me, I would, you know, have a much more, you know, firm stance. Like Grant Holloway said, when at the Florida Relays, you can put together a great performance and impress, you know, Team USA selectors and coaches. But that's just like a regular season meet. Like, I want to see you doing it in bigger stakes. And that's sort of like, you got to rewrite the rules here. And that's how you force athletes to compete at some of these meets.
Yeah, I probably agree with you. And also, it's like, we already have a hard cutoff selection system to make it to Olympics or World Championships. Why not do that for our relays as well? And I think USA they've taken some credence before where I'm thinking the 2012 Olympics where the women broke the 4x1, they had Bianca Knight. She didn't finish top three in the 100 or even top four or something like that. But I think she had competed at Penn Relays earlier with like that full team. So they've taken stances or at least made decisions before with teams that have actually taken the time to practice. They could do it again, but I do understand. Sometimes I do understand where athletes are like, you know, I have to compete at this meet, I have to compete at that meet, I can't go here. But I don't know. We'll see what actually pans out though.
The presenting sponsor of the City of Smack podcast is Olipop. You know, we've been pounding Olipop for over a year now. 2023 was a track season to remember, and City of Smack was able to be there for all of the big moments thanks to the incredible support of Olipop. What has become known as the runner's soda isn't just a great companion for pregame shows or post-race shows, or if you're just watching at home and want to crack a can of Olipop open yourself. It's good for you too. It's a prebiotic soda with 9 grams of fiber, which is 32% of your daily needs, that only has 2 to 5 grams of sugar and helps your digestive health in a way that a threshold workout never could. We love it because there are 15 incredible flavors that will keep your body refreshed and ready to go for the next workout. My current favorite is lemon lime. Caitlin Tui's number one flavor is ginger lemon. There are other great flavors like vintage cola, tropical punch, orange squeeze, cherry vanilla, and I'm hearing rumors of another one coming soon. City of Smack podcast listeners get 25% off non-subscription orders by using code CITIUS25 at checkout at drinkolipop.com. You can also find Olipop at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Kroger, Target, Walmart, Publix, and Most recently, they just got added to Costco, so pro tip there. Next time you're looking for a refreshing and healthy drink after that long run or hard workout, reach for an Olipop. You won't be disappointed. Drinkolipop.com, code Sidious25. All right, back to the Diamond League results. Marco Arop won the men's 800 in 1:43.61. And, you know, that was the world lead for a couple hours. And then after that, it was taken down by Emmanuel Wanyonyi out in Kenya, because he ran 1:43.57 at the Kipkano Classic. And coming into this one, we both, I think, like kind of talked a couple weeks ago, I think, about just like how boring the men's 800 has been since the retirement of David Rudisha. There just isn't that guy who is dominant, and it's everyone trying to beat that guy. And there aren't, like, you know, multiple people just going head to head week in and week out. And in the preview that I wrote, I was like, Marco Arop should take that upon himself and be that guy. So he checks box number one by going out and winning the Diamond League. And then Wanyonyi kind of pops back up and retakes the lead. So now my thinking is, all right, maybe we don't lean into just one guy. Let's have these two guys just duke it out so many times throughout the rest of the season. And you throw in Wycliffe Kinyamal. But I think, like, that's when it starts to get a little bit too wide, where it's like, okay, now we have three guys. Like, let's focus our attention on two guys just continuing to try and beat each other. So Arop won Worlds, then got beaten by Wanyonyi at the Diamond League final. Mm-hmm. I want more of that this season.
Yeah, I'm with it. I am all about it. And you can argue that Arop is probably the most consistent 800 meter runner over the past couple seasons in terms of, he medaled in Eugene. Of course, he won in Budapest last year. So, and Wanyonyi is, I think, a couple years significantly younger, maybe 4 or 5 years younger than Arop. And so, yeah, I want to see those head-to-heads. Like, after, I think Arop is going to compete this weekend also in the Diamond League again, I want to see them go head-to-head at least two or three times before we get to Tokyo, just to put some more spark into it. Because if they're not going to be running, we're not going to be seeing 140. I mean, I'd love to. We're probably not going to be seeing 141s all throughout the season, but at least give us those, like, head-to-heads. At least give us some good competition. I mean, but let's say, like, they matched up right now. Let's say they matched up maybe in a week or two. Like, who would you take to come out on top?
Yeah, it depends on, like, what it's paced at, I think. And also just, like, what the setup is. Arop thrives in, like, more of a tactical setting, like that's how, like, in Budapest. And then if you just kind of, like, string things out right away, when Wanyonyi can just run crazy fast and win. But I think that's what Arop proved in pre, is that, oh, he's also a 142 guy. Right now I would lean Wanyonyi, because that 143 was at altitude, and
that's true.
Maybe that just, like, a little extra 1% of fitness to show for it. Could that have been even faster, you know, at sea level? I don't know. And to your point, we will hopefully see these guys go at it for many years to come. Arop is 25, Wanyonyi 19 years old.
Oh my gosh. this is perfect. This is a really, really good matchup. Like you said, there's other guys, right? Kinyamal, he's not too far behind. He just finished behind Arop. But I mean, yeah, I like the head-to-heads, and we need that to be able to build up, hopefully, the 800 a lot more. And then, yeah, once we get to Tokyo, that'll make it, like, super, super exciting. So, yeah, I like this.
All right. Well, another event that we saw at the Diamond League was Shelby McEwen winning the men's high jump. And the reason why I'm pointing this one out is because, one, he beat Mutaz Barshim, one of the reigning co-Olympic champions. But on top of that, that's a big win by an American on that stage. And then a couple hours later, Javon Harrison jumps 2.34 meters. All of a sudden, like, is the United States like a high jump hotbed right now?
I mean, I love it. Shelby not only winning the Diamond League, he just got, I think, the silver medal at World Indoor Champs. And yeah, Javon got, obviously, a medal last year at the World Championship. So I really like it, where the high jump, especially for American men, has kind of gone under the radar, actually, for many, many years. But now they're getting a chance to kind of really take advantage of, I don't know, an opening in a sense where, of course, Barshimi's still competing, but, you know, he's had a very, very long career. He's maybe on like the second half of his career in a sense. And now between Shelby, Javon Harrison is like relatively new. I feel like he was just at LSU a year or two ago, but it was, you know, back in a couple years back. But yeah, there's an opportunity for not only the U.S. to do some really big damage, but maybe, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they went 1-2 at the Olympics, right? And it's not going to be easy, but there is an opportunity for the U.S. to really step things up.
Yeah, maybe this year it's two Americans splitting the gold medal. But however, I think the caveat about sharing medals, that might be over now that the Olympic gold medalists are being paid $50,000. So if you think about it, like, would who is it? Tembery and Barshim have split the gold medal in 2021, knowing that maybe they were that they each would only be taking home 25K. Let's do a little revisionist history. Like, would they have still made that decision? I think yes, because in the grand scheme of things, like $50,000 to those guys isn't a whole lot. Did you just see that weird, like, I saw Barshim posted it or something like that. There's going to be a meet in Qatar that pays out like a crazy amount of money for the high jump.
Yes, I saw that, which is wild. I mean, it makes sense because it's like Qatar, Middle East, whatever. But like, that is crazy. But I think that's pretty cool. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I feel like,
yeah, I'm trying to pull up the post right now because I was wondering what it was. Exactly. But then I was like, oh, is this like the first foray? It's also, oh, $77,000 in prize money. I don't think that necessarily is going to go to one person, but still, high jumpers rarely got that. So it's the top 12 high jumpers.
Yeah.
So it's got Wu, it's got Barshim, it's got Hamish Kerr, it's got Tembery, and it's everyone.
Javon is in there. Yeah.
It's in an amphitheater. Like, to when we've seen events like Mondo Duplantis's like pole vault jump off, you know, pop off like that, it's just like one event, you focus your whole attention into it. That is where you kind of can, you know, play around with the presentation of things and really make it into an interesting, engaging, and entertaining product. And so, you know, I'm here for it. Like, I need to know more about like what this event is going to entail, but I'm sure we'll get more details in the weeks to come. One last result from the Diamond League that you wanted to kind of highlight is Marlady Paulino winning the 400. Coming into the meet, she said that this could be the year that she breaks the 400 meter world record. That 400 meter world record is 47.60 by Marita Koch, which has stood since 1985. And so she ends up opening up her outdoor season with a 50.08 just ahead of Natalia Kaczmarek, 50.29. Britton Wilson in her Diamond League debut, third, 51.26. Yep. So when Paulina's talking world record, she's got your attention.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the context of the question was asked about like Shauna Miluwibo is coming back, Sydney McLaughlin-Vroni, you know, potentially running the four. And then she answered, she actually said world record. So that sparked up my ears. And it's not like I think the world record is going to go down, but it gets me thinking about how Paulino is assessing the rest of the field. Because essentially last year, for the most part, she was uncontested where, you know, Sydney got injured. Miluwibo, you know, was on maternity leave. So she was uncontested. I think she wants that competition. I think it was even at the LA Grand Prix last year. This was before Paris. You had asked her, like, you're looking forward to the matchup with Sydney. And she's like, bring it on or something like that. And I think she really
said she was not afraid. And I was like, I love that.
Yeah. I like, just like we were talking about the 800, I want to see the competition between, you know, all these women who are running really fast. And again, I don't know if Sydney's going to run the 400. I think she's running the 400 meter hurdles at the LA Grand Prix next month. But just the idea of that competition, I think, is really going to push some of these women to, you know, to some fast times. But yeah, this is a good one.
Velus is the active recovery footwear brand that is designed to help you restore, revive, and re-energize before and after you train. They are launching two new styles to their recovery mix for spring 2024, the Active Slide and the Active Flip Collection. These active recovery sandals are super lightweight and equipped with Velus's three-part tri-motion technology. They cradle your heel with impact-absorbing foam that cushions your feet with every step. It's got amazing arch support and forefoot flex that allows your fatigued feet and toes to stretch and relax. Velus is focused on helping athletes recover faster before and after you train so you can get after your next run performing at your best. Run, recover, repeat with Velus. Enjoy a 20% discount by entering code SidiousMag20 at checkout at velusfootwear.com. All right, so I'm going to tie in one more result from China into just like a general wild weekend of sprints on the men's side, because this is sort of where, you know, now at around 11 a.m. on Saturday, my attention was just scattered all throughout the country because shortly after the Diamond League was happening, then I started watching the Kipkano Classic that was taking place in Nairobi. The biggest shock result, I think, of the whole thing was Courtney Lindsay beating Letsile Tabogo 19-71. Both of them were given the same exact time, but then when they went to the photo finish and the extra decimals, Courtney Lindsay prevailed, which, like, I was a little shocked by. Like, it's a meet in Africa. Maybe the whoever it was, the officials could have given it to Tabogo. But, I mean, very impressive for Courtney Lindsay, who made last year's world championship team, but I feel like gets really overlooked in the grand scheme of things because the United States, their top three guys, you know, sort of the big three of the men's 200 has been Noel Iles, Arian Knighton, and Kenny Bednarik since the last Olympic cycle. And then you've got a slew of other guys, think, you know, Christian Coleman and Fred Curley, who have thought of themselves in that same category, and they've gone after the double. But it was actually Courtney Lindsay who ended up taking the fourth spot that we had for the world championships because Noel Iles is the reigning world champion. But this time around, there's no buys to the Olympics. Only three get to go. And it's starting to get very crowded.
Yeah, man, this is big. And I really, really want to hone in on that idea of the 200 being very, very crowded, where, yes, Noel Iles did not have to compete last year, which quote unquote opened up a spot for someone. In this case, it was Courtney Lindsay. But I mean, if you're seeing Courtney running 19.71 into a headwind, and yes, it was at altitude, so there's like those factors in, but I mean, this is dangerous. And he's coming off running 19.88 at the Tom Jones just a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago or something like that. But I think this really does muddy up the waters in a sense where, you know, we can probably pick Noel Iles as, you know, he's going to make the team. He's already like super dominant. Knighton is probably there. But then you want to say Bednarik, then you want to say Courtney Lindsay. And he actually trains with Kenny Bednarik, so they're probably going head to head at practice all the time. So I don't know, man. This is going to be very, very challenging. And just to even point out the fact of, like, yes, it was the same time, but he beat out Letsile Tabogo, who is like the guy right now. That must be a motivating factor. Like, hold on, I could beat one of the best guys in the world right now. I can do a lot of things. I mean, there's no fear. There might be no fear for Courtney Lindsay going forward.
But the way Tabogo then walked off the track, I was like, this man is not losing again the rest of the year.
You think so?
Well, until maybe the Olympics and he meets Noel Iles. Because it's sort of like, that's not the guy who needs extra motivation. Tabogo in the past, you know, this was not a case where he eased up at the finish line or anything like that. Like, Tabogo's eased up at the finish line, but still won at, you know, World Juniors and meets like that, where he's comfortably ahead of things. This time he had someone pushing him to the finish line, and Courtney Lindsay just timed the lean at the finish line perfectly.
Perfect.
And I'm so interested in how the 200 meters at the U.S. Championships is going to, you know, shake out, where, you know, 2 years ago we had Iles versus Knighton be like the marquee matchup in that race at the final, and everyone wanted to watch it. I just remember just like the daily podcast we were doing, we were just counting down the days until we got to see that. And then I think in 2023 last year, because of how well Noah ran at Worlds, it was just sort of like, oh, he's going to you know, make the team and win again. And then sort of like lost its spice, where it's sort of like Noah Lyles and Arian Knighton are your top two, and that's it. And then that third spot and fourth spot, I guess, last year was open. Now there's only three. Both of Lyles and Knighton have not opened up in the 200 yet. They're sitting at home. They're watching all of this happen. I'm sure they're going to come out firing on all cylinders. But, you know, I remember seeing, you know, the Netflix cameras around. If the Netflix cameras are back for a second season, to your point, Courtney Lindsey versus Kenny Bednarik in the 200 for one potential spot, that's where I think there's like, there's definitely a story there. And also, now if it's the same production company as Drive to Survive, that this is the drama that unfolds in F1 when it's, you know, you only got two seats to in a car and you got a young up and comer coming to replace that person. This is perfect. Like, it's made for TV. So all of a sudden, all in on the 200. Kenny did have a good showing. He was at the same meet, but he opted to run the 100. He ended up winning over the field that included Ferdinand Omagnola. Very funny occurrence that happened here was Omagnola clearly false started and then was still allowed to run because, of course, you're not going to disqualify, you know, the fastest African sprinter ever in
home
in Nairobi. Like, so he was still able to run, but he ended up finishing fifth. So not a good showing for him. Of course, maybe after, you know, all of that stuff, you're kind of thrown off a little bit. But here's kind of the sequence of what happened in the 100 this past weekend. It was like kicked off with, you know, Christian Coleman winning the 100 in Xiamen in only 10:13. And everyone was scratching their heads afterwards being like, why was that so slow? And very clearly, I think like, I thought of you again after that performance because I started laughing and I was like, oh, Anderson's prediction about like the American record falling, not happening this year. If we're winning Diamond Leagues in 10:13 and Fred Kerley was 10:17 right behind him. So that's where I was thinking. I was like, is this going to be another slow year in the 100? I can't really tell what the conditions were in China for that race because the wind reading was still wind legal. It was just really weird. What did you make of that one first before we get into the other things that happened?
Yeah. So I'll say that after the other results and on the sprint side in China, I wasn't too concerned, like in terms of, you know, 10:13 or anything like that. So I'm not too concerned with the time. I still think my American record prediction is going to hold. We still have a lot of time. But I mean, I think the most notable thing, at least for Coleman, and he actually said it in his post-race interview where he didn't get a good start. He was almost like surprised, but the fact that he was still able to win the race with a strong second half indicates that he can win any race, right? He's going to be able to be successful in any other race. His start is the most consistent thing. So he obviously is going to always be improving on that, but that's going to be super consistent. The second half of the race is where he's going to need to make some improvements. So this is a good indicator of where he's going to be able to go, how he's going to be able to progress through the season. And he beat out Fred Kerley, who is like coming down from the 400, the 200, right? He's known for his, you know, stronger second half. So this is, in my opinion, I think this is a really, really big race for Coleman, not only in the fact that he won a Diamond League, but the fact that it gives him some motivation on like what might be possible. Now, with Kenny B in the fold, running 9.91, slightly wind-aided, that also introduces some other factors where he said that I think he's going to be doing 100, 200 at USA's. Noah Lyles going for that double. I mean, the field in the 100 meters is very, very stacked, but I don't know. What did you kind of think of Coleman and then, kind of the rest of the 100 as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm now intrigued as to what they're going to end up doing in the second go-round. Luckily, it's sort of like Xiamen, and then in Shanghai, it's sort of the same lineup of guys running. Yep. And I kind of want Fred to storm back and get another win. Fred opened up with two low-key 100-meter races in Miami. And I'm still I'm waiting for the moment where Fred looks like 2022 Fred. Still hasn't happened yet.
And are you worried about Fred?
Am I worried about Fred? I think a little bit. But it's, like, to your point, still early. And it's just such a crowded picture now. Like, all these guys attempting to double, My thought is maybe there's going to be some people who are better served just putting all of their eggs in one basket. Just like if you're Fred, maybe you start to see some of these results in the 200 and like you're not there yet. So focus all your efforts on the 100. I don't know. Like, is that worth exploring for some people? Yeah. I mean, like you want to increase your Olympic odds and try and go after two events, but it's also just like you're working different skill sets in training. Like when you chatted with Usain Bolt, like he was saying, like to attempt the double is really hard in terms of training for both. And we kind of saw a little bit of that last year with Noah Lyles. Yes, he was still able to run fast in a 200, but not as fast as his, you know, yeah, American record the previous year. And so are some of these guys trying to do too much? Like same thing with Coleman. Like he wants to attempt the double as well. We see Christian run 200 sometimes, and at the very end, like, you know, maybe with the last like 20-30 meters, you can tell he's working hard to get to the finish line because he comes from more of the short side of things. It's guys like Christian Coleman and Fred Curley, even though Fred has the background as a 400 guy, I think they'd be better suited just trying to master the 100 if that's the team that they really, really want to make. Three spots is wild to try and cram all of these names that we've talked about. And now there's new names popping up. Yeah. Tamars McCallum, who I interviewed as a high schooler at the 2022 New Balance Nationals. He's now at the University of Tennessee. Popped off a 9.94 in Columbia, South Carolina this past weekend. No one saw this coming. I think his at PR all. Was 10-2, I think, heading into the day.
Yeah, 10-2 before this.
Wind legal, plus 2 flat. Like he met it right there. So he got all the help that he could from the wind. But major step forward for someone like that. Of course, we're going to need more performances to really back that up, you know, later on in the season. Makes the NCAA 100 really interesting with him in favor of Ashe.
Yeah.
But then later on in the afternoon, as if like there wasn't enough action happening in the 100, Christian Miller, a 17-year-old out of Florida, goes 17. To Clermont and runs 9.93 with a plus 1.6 wind rating. That is a U.S. U20 record. Only Issam Asinga last year and Letsila Tobogo have ever run faster as, you know, juniors.
U20s, yeah.
Here's a little caveat to the whole thing that, you know, kind of course, because track, it needs extra things explained. We put up a post on our Instagram and the race is on there as well. And in the caption, I accidentally said like, oh, only, you know, Tobogo and Asinga have run faster before turning 20. That's actually not true. Trayvon Bermel ran like 9.83 before he turned 20 years old. But however, the way that World Athletics counts the U20 records is that because of it, you have to turn, it's based off of the year that you turn 20 and there's a cutoff. Yeah. And so that 9.83 doesn't count towards like the US U20 record. So regardless, the biggest story here, Christian Miller running 9.93, the youngest person ever to break 10 seconds. What did you make of this whole thing?
it's wild. Just adding to the fact, like you said at the top, where the 100 meters is so stacked. Now, I'm not saying Christian Miller is going to make Team USA. We have to see, you know, some more consistency, hopefully. But I think this just... this is a huge indicator of, like, I think just overall where we're talking about training, we're talking about competition, right? Even just an athlete, like a high school athlete like him, being able to compete with, you know, at a meet with like a lot of pros and things like that. I mean, just the whole landscape of sprinting in general, I think, is moving in a very positive direction. And it also speaks to the fact that you can run 9.93. And of course, you know, he's getting huge headlines now because he's 17 years old. But like, it's like, that's not even quote unquote fast anymore, right? Like if you run 9.93, you're probably not going to make Team USA in the 100. You probably have to run 9.8 something. So yeah, I mean, it's a really, really big deal. And I really want to see him hopefully run a lot more consistent in that range, whether it's like 9.9s, you know, 9.99, 9.97s, right? Just see us a few more of those times. That would really be a big, big factor for him to, you know, see. And he's going to the University of Georgia, I think, in the next year or so. So this is a good start. This is a huge, huge performance, a big start for him.
Yeah, I don't think like if you're Noah Lyles or anyone like that, you're all that concerned by something like this. You're encouraged by the fact like, oh, it's young talent that's coming up. And you hope that it develops better than Issam Asinga and all the unfortunate things that happened with him being provisionally suspended last year. But yeah, I think like I want to see him back it up. Christian Miller runs a really good 200 as well. Yeah. It was like 20-point something, I think, at the New Balance Nationals. And so, let's just remember the name, I think, for now. If he starts rattling these things off and gets even faster, then that's when sort of like, all right, that's when I think the mainstream media starts to catch on to this kid potentially having a shot at the Olympic team. But for now, just congratulations on the U20 record.
I know. 17 years old. It's crazy. But yeah, we'll see how it pans out.
Other quick things to mention from Nairobi. Mary Mora opened up the 800 with a 157. She's going up against Athing Mo and Keely Hodgkinson in a rematch of the World Championships at the Prefontaine Classic next month. So really good showing from her. Another notable thing that happened in Kenya was a story that we talked about a couple weeks ago, which was Christine Mboma, the 2021 Olympic 200-meter silver medalist, competing for the first time since August 2022. And we were just like, oh, she can really disrupt, the script writer's plans for, a Gabby Thomas, Sharika Jackson, or even just like in the 100 side of things. And then all of a sudden, she runs 12:32, finishes last in the 100 at the Kipkano Classic. Now, part of me is like, not that surprised, because this is, we had no idea coming into this. Is she going to run crazy fast or crazy slow? And we got the latter, because what we've learned through, Caster Semenya's book and just interviews that have happened with DSD athletes is the moment that they start taking that, hormone suppressing medication or undergo any sort of procedure for that, their bodies are just not the same. And so, like Anderson, how did this change sort of your assessment of Mboma and the short sprints?
Yeah, like you said, we were really kind of almost hyping this up in terms of her return and everything. And I stepped away for a second, so I didn't get to see the race live. But then when I got to see it back again, so initially I was like, did she fall? Did she trip or something? But when I actually saw the race, yeah, she just didn't, perform as we might have expected. I think in general, I guess I'm taking like two aspects where one, I don't think it changes much because of course, she'd been out since 2021, she hasn't competed since 2022. So it's not like the fields are already there. All the top women are already competing, whether she was there or not. But then on the flip side, this could be just like breaking the ice or like getting the cobwebs out, and she could begin to get, a lot better. Now, is she going to get back to, the 21.7 form? I don't know. It doesn't look like it right now, but I wouldn't 100% write her off. Again, first race of the year, first race back in a couple years, I think that we could see something special again, but I'm not going to invest too much into it, but I wouldn't be surprised.
All right. I think that wraps up all of our sprint talk for the week. I know a lot of people are like, wow, these guys are really into the sprints, but hey, like listen, there's some drama and like these major players taking place. All right. Then on Sunday morning, another early wake up for people, the London Marathon was taking place. The biggest stories around the London Marathon is just sort of like, this is the last major marathon before the Olympics, and countries like Kenya, Great Britain, Ethiopia were using this race as a big indicator for who is going to compete at the games. And for Kenya, which we've kind of talked about and we've written about a lot just on our website, like, they're just kind of narrowing down just like who's going to be the best team. Boston put Helen O'Beery and Sharon Lochetti in a really good spot for them to be, two potential people on that team. Does that leave one spot or two spots open? I think Helen O'Beery is the only lock. Now, after this past weekend, Paris Jepchirchir smashing the women's only world record in 2:16:16, broke the previous record by 45 seconds. I think that solidifies her case to defend her Olympic gold medal in Paris. And then similarly on the men's side for Kenya, Kipchoge is the only lock. Then after that, there's two spots that are pretty wide open. I think Benson Cabrudo takes the second one because, one, he's beaten Kipchoge every single time out.
Yeah.
And won the Tokyo Marathon and broke the course record. So he's proven to run fast. He's a winner. And then the third spot, like Alexander Mutiso Munyao, who won the London Marathon this past weekend in 2:04:01. First major marathon win, has run even faster in Valencia. I think that's another sort of like, all right, here's my resume. Looks good. I should be selected. And so that those were my major takeaways from the London Marathon. I think the beauty of it was that the women's race was actually a race coming into the final stretch.
It was good. And I mean, like you said, women's only world record is a pretty big deal considering how long it had been standing for. I am curious, though, if Kenya didn't select her, would you be surprised?
Yes. I would be very shocked if they didn't select Jepchirchir because, you know, I think, again, from the marketability side of things and like Kenya being thrust into the spotlight, and this is their event, Jepchirchir has a chance to make history as the first woman to win back-to-back Olympic gold medals. That is a tremendous accomplishment, and they want to give her that chance at making history, I think. So I think like Jepchirchir and Obiri are the two big players that they're going to field. And then Sharon Lokedi, I would give the edge over someone like Rosemary Wanjiru, who finished second, I think, at the Tokyo Marathon and ran really fast. I weigh the Boston course and the New York City performance where she finished on the podium there over the ability to run fast because in the grand scheme of things, I think if you put Sharon Lokedi on a flat, fast course, she would also run really fast.
Yeah.
So that's my thinking of things. Then also another country that had a big sort of shakeup after this past weekend, Ethiopia. Kenny Sibikele finishing second on the men's side of things at 41 years old in 2:04:15. That betters his own Masters world record that he set in Valencia last December. Bekele has not competed at an Olympics since 2012. He's got three Olympic gold medals from, you know, his legendary performances in 2000 and 2004. And then in 2012, he finished less than a second behind his own brother in the 10K and missed out on a medal. Yeah. His brother got bronze. He ended up fourth. And since then, hasn't been at the Olympics. He moved to the marathon in 2014, and there hasn't been a top marathoner with more of a roller coaster like career than Kenenisa Bekele. You just never know what you're going to get. Like, he can show up to a race, and all signs have been pointing at the fact that he's out of shape and not healthy or not fit. And then he'll blast a 2:01:48 or whatever it was in Berlin. And then there's other times where he'll, you know, say training's going really well and then he'll drop out or was injured. And so that's sort of maybe where the hesitancy might be with Bekele. It's just like, all right, like what's going to happen? And I think Cisse Lema, who won the Boston Marathon, you put him on the Olympic team. And then after that, Bekele is my next logical choice because, one, like, he is the legend that he is. He's never run the marathon at the games. You give him this chance. Honestly, this is the perfect farewell for him. He just signed like a new contract with Anta, the shoe company. So yeah. I think that's going to go on for a little bit longer, but he's an ageless wonder at this point, 41 years old running this fast. I think you got to put him on the team.
Yeah, I'm probably with that. I mean, like you said, almost a send off in a sense where it's like, he's so up and down, but he's still in it. This was a performance to say, okay, we can give you this spot to at least, you know, give you that proper send off. It'd be great. And it'd be a great way for him to, you know, I don't know if he'd get on the podium. Again, he's so up and down in terms of his performances, but just to give him that opportunity, give him the coverage, give him the grace. Cause we don't want to see someone like Bekele, who's, you know, in the conversation as the GOAT, the distance GOAT in a sense. We don't want to see someone like him end his career, you know, on a bad note. Right. So, I don't know. Give him a little send off. I think be good.
If he somehow wins the Olympic gold medal in the marathon, that would be incredible. And who knows? I mean, the world cross country champion many times has done well on with hills in the past. You got to give him mods. It's not zero. So
I was going to say, what's the chance?
It's a long shot, but not the longest of shots. I think Bekele has better, of course, like, I guess based off the time, this is not a hot take or anything like that, better odds than any of the Americans.
I mean, yes, obviously. Yeah, of course. but it'll be tough. I don't know what the Paris course, I don't know how, like what it's like, but
it's obviously hilly. It's
hilly. Okay.
Oh, there's so then, like a climb that's 13 grade. Like, all right, for the people listening to this, get on a treadmill, turn that elevation up to 13%, and that is a climb for I think it might be a mile or something. Clayton Young posted a photo of it on his Instagram story when he was in Paris, and I was like, man, that looks brutal. So that's what's in store for these people, and that's what why the importance of, you know, training on hills and tough, and that's why weighing Boston makes sense.
Yeah.
On the women's side of things, Tigist Assefa ended up finishing second, the world record holder who's run 2:11. In 2:16:23, she was just ahead of Joycelyn Jepkosgei, who was the second behind her, and Margutu Alemu, who was the second behind her. Like, this was like literally a sprint finish between the three of them. A lot of prize money on the line. But Assefa, all three of them got under the previous course and women's only marathon world record by Mary Kitani, which was 2:17:01. Mm-hmm. Now, my thought with Assefa here is, yes, this is a really great performance and puts her in a great spot to make the Ethiopian Olympic team. I don't think she does it. And that's because she's the reigning Berlin marathon champion. She came into this race talking about the potential of running under 2:10. That is crazy for a woman. I think one, Assefa gets a really big payday and appearance fee to show up to the Berlin Marathon. When all of these other top stars are going to the Olympics and running for free, there's more money. Go get your money, especially as the defending champion. And you go after that sub 2:10, which you obviously cannot get in Paris. So my thinking is, yeah, it'd be cool if Tigist Assefa represents Ethiopia at the Olympics. I think it's cooler and probably much more lucrative for her to go back to Berlin and run under 2:10 like she hopes to do, which would be bananas.
That would be wild. I mean, you're talking about competing with, you know, unfortunate to say, but some of the best American men when we're talking about sub 2:10 at that point. But I am interested in general, just like what World Athletics thinks of the marathoners, right? Making these decisions where they're skipping out, you know, obviously they're offering, you know, prize money to the gold medalists at the Paris Olympic Games, but you have marathoners making decisions of like, I can make way more money if I just skip the Olympics and go to, you know, these major fall marathons. And that's probably going to continue even into the future, regardless if World Athletics, they're never going to match prize money that, you know, a marathon major can pay out. So
yeah, this is something that came up, I think, last year when we were discussing like the world championship marathon. It's like, why is it that World Athletics hosts a marathon in the summertime in the same city as the world championships? Now you've got the world road running championships. Do you splinter off the marathon from, you know, the summer and put it wherever the road championships are going to be? Or do you find a way to incorporate, essentially, I remember Kyle writing about this in the Lap Count, like the World Marathon Majors is a competitor product to the World Championship Marathon and the Olympic Marathon, because to your point, like, there's much more money involved. And so why run something for free when you're going to be training really hard and, you know, you can make a bunch of money going to one of the majors? So that's always what's been so interesting. It's like, yeah, maybe on paper, it looks like someone got snubbed. You know, like maybe Evans Chebet ultimately doesn't actually want to compete at the Olympics for free because he can make more money going to, you know, the Chicago or Berlin marathon this fall. So it is interesting. World Athletics did just give an award to the World Marathon Major. So it's like a friendly, they definitely have like a friendly relationship, but you should see it as a competitor product. But that's, I guess, like how they view it. But It's going to be interesting. And I think in a couple of weeks, we'll find out just who is on these Olympic teams. And as much as we've joked about like the way that they should do it is just kind of like bachelor style, handing out, you know, roses or whatever, or hand out like the Kenyan Olympic team kits. Like, we're going to know soon. My prediction is Obiri, Jepchirchir, and Loketi on the women's side, Kipchoge, Kipruto, and Mutiso Munyao on the men's side. And so, yeah, we'll see how it all pans out. But I think that does it. I'm sure there's more performances.
There's so many more, but yeah.
That we could have unpacked, like the DMR world record falling. But we'll be back. I'll be back on the mic on Wednesday to read Kyle Merber's lap count newsletter. So there'll be more highlights in that. I think that does it for this episode of This Week in Track and Field. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
See you.